Hello, everyone, and thank you so much for joining us for another episode of the Star Legacy Foundation podcast. I am so excited today to be joined by Rob Ryder, who's going to be sharing with us a little bit about the Sad Dads Club. Rob and his wife experienced the stillbirth of their daughter, Lila, and he was previously supporting other friends through similar losses, but now, unfortunately, it was his turn to be supported. And together with these other dads, they formed the Sad Dads Club to honor their babies and process their grief. And their club now, unfortunately, includes many other dads. I love how their website points out that this is the worst club with the best members, something I think many of us can relate to. So, Rob, thank you so much for taking the time to join us and for all of the efforts you're doing for our families.
Thank you so much, Lindsay, for inviting me to chat today.
Wonderful. Well, I mean, I clearly want to get into all the positive things that you have built from such a tragic experience, but I feel like we probably need to start at the beginning a little bit, and kind of learn where your journey started. And so, would you be willing to share with us a little bit about Lila's pregnancy and your initiation, if you will, into this club?
Absolutely. Lila was, as you mentioned, stillborn, and it was at 38 weeks on December 13th of 2017, after what can only be described as a boring textbook healthy pregnancy. No red flags emerged anywhere, no discomfort that my wife was experiencing beyond what was completely normal and expected throughout the pregnancy. And we were both in that 38-week appointment, and suddenly there was no heartbeat. My wife hadn't noticed any decrease in fetal movement. There had been no bleeding, no significant pain. It was a very early morning appointment on a Wednesday. And maybe that's why there wasn't any sort of notice of decreased fetal movement, but it was so out of nowhere. It was completely, as it is for most people who go through a stillbirth, it's just the floor drops beneath you. You don't expect it. You don't see it coming, and it completely changes your world. Maybe a better way to put that is that it completely shatters your world, flips it upside down, puts it in a blender, and you're left then to put all the pieces back together again somehow, many of which you can never find again. But my wife and I were so eager to fulfill the dream of expanding our family. That was one of the earliest things that she and I had connected on, was this intense desire to be parents, to want to have children and start a family. And so it was not entirely easy for us to get pregnant. It wasn't just like we decided we wanted to have children and then suddenly started trying and got pregnant. There were no intense interventions, but it took us a while. And so we were elated when we found out that she was pregnant with our daughter, Lila. And just unimaginably, at that 38-week appointment, there was no heartbeat, and it confirmed every parent's, every adult's worst nightmare. It was completely disorienting, heartbreaking, shattering, and tragic. Related within the context of Sad Dad's Club. So I mentioned that Lila was stillborn on December 13th of 2017. 11 months earlier, one of my best friends from college, Jay, and his wife, Ellie, had also had a stillborn daughter, Bella, at 41 weeks. I had never previously heard of anyone that I loved or community member ever enduring a stillbirth. That's how foreign it was to me. Earlier that year was the first time I'd heard of it, but I had a front row seat to see exactly how incredibly difficult, exhausting, and life-changing that was for Jay and his family. We supported them the best that we could and were there for them in every way that we could be. I even remember as my wife and I were going over to their house, I told her, okay, if your phone is low on battery, don't say your phone's going to die. Say that it's low on battery or you need a charger. Try and change your language. And this was before we had experienced that loss, but it was a bit surreal that within the same calendar year, our wives also saw the same doctor that we both experienced a stillbirth. And this doctor, she is phenomenal. There was no sort of malpractice or anything that occurred that was on the medical side of things that, could have saved Lila or Bella to our knowledge. But yeah, I had the fortunate misfortune of having someone that I could immediately go to. And so that's a little more than just Lila's story, but kind of how I had a net that could, I was immediately caught before I could fall, in having somebody with whom I was so close, who understood what was going on, what I was about to go through, and was there to support me as I entered the grief journey.
Yeah, it's probably a very bittersweet thing that you had already walked that path with them. Clearly, we wish neither of you had had to do that. But it certainly does present a different perspective because, like you said, most people are how you were with your first exposure to it, having no idea that this even exists. I know for myself, I thought it was an antiquated term that didn't even happen in today's society. You know, we're too advanced where you have too much technology to allow
Right.
something like that to happen.
Yeah, it's I remember getting the text from Jay, and exactly, I didn't know what could have possibly happened when he told me that they lost the baby. We knew that they were expecting their second child any day, and the first thought that went through my head is, did someone drop the child in the delivery room? Did one of the doctors or nurses? That was the closest thing I could grasp to that may have happened because I just had never known. As you said, I thought it was antiquated. I thought being that far along that you're in the clear, that you're safe.
Yeah. One of the hardest things I think that's that people don't necessarily understand when we talk about stillbirth is that there's still a delivery and a birth that has to happen. And I know from the mom's perspective, that is obviously a major piece of that and trying to understand how you can kind of prepare yourself for delivery and what that experience is going to be like, knowing that the outcome is going to be incredibly different. But most of the time our emphasis is on the moms, right? For obvious reasons.
Absolutely.
But I was wondering if you could share a little bit about what that particular aspect of your journey was like, as a dad, because we know that it's incredibly intense for them too.
Just in terms of going into the delivery room and being there, that was one of the most terrifying situations that I was preparing myself for and then eventually endured. It was no easier than I thought it was going to be. It was maybe a better way to say that it was exactly as terrifying and difficult as I thought it would be. It was also surprising because I hadn't yet seen Lila and I hadn't yet known for sure that she had died. I knew that people were telling me that that was what had happened, that she no longer had a heartbeat, that she was no longer had life, but I hadn't seen it. And so I know that in that moment when she was delivered, that it all became real. And not to say that I was denying it prior to that, but that seeing is believing, and I saw it. And so that was an entirely different level of pain and of grief and of sorrow, of disbelief, because it was silent. And it's a deafening silence, is how everybody who has been through this particular type of loss describes it. There was just no sound. And beyond that, when they put her down, I just saw that she wasn't moving. And those two moments of seeing her silent, and then they put her down to get her cleaned up a bit before giving her to my wife, I just saw that she wasn't moving. And that was the most difficult moment that I had had up to that point, because everything was a bit surreal in that it wasn't necessarily real because, again, I hadn't seen it yet. So that's something I had to go into EMDR therapy to get semi-resolved. Whether or not it's completely resolved, it remains to be seen. But that was the moment I could point to that was the most difficult for me, and that was so unbelievably helpless feeling. And I'd lost so much control over being able to protect my daughter, which I felt was my role as her father. And so all these cascading emotions of helplessness, of guilt, of failure, of sorrow, of pain were overwhelming, to put it lightly.
Yeah. When you mention role, one thing that we hear from a lot of dads is that they feel this pressure to then be the strong one. And sometimes people even specifically say, you're going to have to, be her rock or the whole family's going to lean on you kind of thing. The interesting part about that to me is that some dads have said that that's a positive thing because it gives them something, a job to focus on. It kind of transitions that role, like you said, from protecting to maybe having protecting in a different way. But then I've also had some people say that it's a huge responsibility and they don't feel prepared or equipped to do that. And so it kind of was more of a burden. Did you experience any of that?
For me personally, in that moment, in those subsequent moments, I felt like, as I alluded to before, that I lost control. And I like to be in control. And I think men in general like to know that they are in control in the way that they can protect their family, that they can fix anything that is wrong, that they can maintain that balance and preserve that safety. And so knowing that Lila was already gone, the focus went to my wife. And it's interesting you articulate it like a job to focus on. I do think that that was a big part of it for me. I also think that it was my own personal way of regaining control, of being able to focus on something that I could help or fix. And fix is the wrong word to use there, but definitely something my wife had gone through the physical endeavor of delivering Lila, and she opted for a C-section. So there was, surgery conducted, and she had to heal and she had to be taken care of. I also wasn't ready to face my grief completely at that point. So it was a two-part benefit for me in being able to focus on my wife, because then I could ignore my grief and not face it head on or dive too deeply into it. And I could feel as though I was regaining a semblance of control. I hesitate to say that it was regaining control entirely, because it had already been lost at such a deep and profound level.
Yeah, I think that's really well said, and it makes perfect sense. Makes perfect sense. So fast forwarding a little bit, you and Jay, fortunately or unfortunately, found Chris, another dad that was in your circle, who experienced a similar loss. So can you talk about when you first started supporting each other? What did that look like, and what kinds of things did you find helpful?
That was just such an incredibly beneficial for all three of us dynamic and outlet to have, because we knew we could go somewhere and say everything we want or say nothing at all. And I always articulate it that way because it's true that in some circles or in some social situations or even professional settings, you feel the need to overexplain yourself or you worry about saying too little. And we could just unmask with one another and we could be completely ourselves without having to explain why we felt crappy or why we were struggling. We could just say everything and no explanation behind it was needed. No one was going to look at the other guy and think, well, I don't really understand that, or give any indication of anything other than complete understanding, compassion, and validation. And we met Chris because his wife had also gone to school with Jay and me. And 7 months after my wife and I lost Lila, he and his wife Sarah lost their daughter Izzy. So within the span of 18 months, the three of us had had stillborn daughters. So we were all, while yes, at different points in our grief journey, with Jay being the furthest along, we were all still pretty new to it relatively. And so I think having one another to validate the things that we were going through, and having it was so vital. It was so crucial towards us returning to other areas of our life where we were in demand, which I think is what Sad Dad's Club is doing. We had this space where we knew, even if we weren't with one another, we knew that I can just give him a call, or we can find a time to hang out. Even if we weren't with one another, I think that feeling of comfort and that feeling of reassurance that we do have people who get it and who understand and who are also going through it was extremely healing. And that just became this trio. The three of us were spending a lot of time together, and we were constantly after that meeting other dads in various settings on the beach or at T-ball or any of the other things, where we're realizing this is happening more often than any of us realized.
So is that kind of what prompted your transition into a more formal and official organization?
That was absolutely the impetus. And I think maybe even before meeting more people, at least in my recollection, but Jay or Chris, whether or not they hear this or agree or disagree, but I think it was, we knew that there were more dads out there who didn't have what we had, and that we could expand what we have. And that is really powerful to think about what it was doing for the three of us individually and collectively. Why not put a call out there and see if there are other dads who may be suffering in silence, who may have no one in their community, no loved one who's ever been through anything like this, no one to validate them. And the thought of going through it alone, which that is like the alienation and grief just felt like too much for anyone. And what we were getting out of it and what we were giving to it, we felt this should be expanded. This should be something that more guys know about. We should open this circle more widely and let's see what the interest is like out there for engagement. And that is exactly the inspiration behind us starting Sad Dads Club and informally making a call for community just by starting a website, starting an Instagram. I had gotten off social media entirely after we lost Lila. Place in life, I was 33. Everything was a pregnancy or birth announcement. I didn't want to put that bad energy into the atmosphere and in the world around someone else's miracle and something that I was, and I didn't want to do that to myself also. I didn't want to be triggered that way. And so for 4 years, I never even thought to look on social media, whether or not back in 2017, 2018, there was any sort of grief support space. But as soon as we got back on Instagram and started Sad Dads Club and utilized that social media platform, there was this whole section of Instagram that was related to grief and to child loss and pregnancy loss. Didn't see a lot of stuff out there for the guys. So All more reason we recognized that there was a void. Also, we knew that there were resources, understandably so, geared towards the mom, towards the birthing parent. And so we wanted to make sure that there was a space for dads because we felt the depth of the loss and the pain that it brought to our lives and the strain that it brought on all of our relationships in every context of our life. So realizing how special the outlet that we had in one another was, we knew we had to do whatever we could to make sure it was available to someone who didn't have anyone out there.
Well, and I think tapping into that void, like you said, is very evident how big that void was by how much you have grown. And from my perspective, it feels like you're just exploding in some of your reach and your programs and everything, because it's just amazing to see how in a relatively short amount of time you've just really built something pretty incredible. So for those that aren't familiar with the Sad Dads Club, can you talk a little bit about your programs and how your organization works?
Absolutely. And please cut me off if I start going on too long, but I always like to open with our mission statement, which is that Sad Dads Club helps fellow bereaved fathers navigate life after loss by nurturing a supportive community and providing access to mental health services. So that's the last part of that mission statement, the nurturing a supportive community and providing access to mental health services. Those are our two dedicated areas of impact as a nonprofit. I should mention that we started on March 1st of 2022 and became a 501c3 nonprofit charitable entity in April of 2023. So a little over a year later. And when we were really thinking critically about how we identify our areas of impact, we wanted to keep doing what we were doing, which was so important. It was nurturing and facilitating these peer community-based support spaces where dads who have similar life experiences and are now grieving the loss of a child if they've experienced pregnancy, infant, and or child loss, they have a place here where they will be met with other dads who are going through something similar. And we facilitate virtual meeting spaces as well as in-person engagement opportunities. Virtually, we meet right now once a week on Zoom. And we also have a Discord, a private channel on Discord. Discord is a free app. And one of our dads out in Los Angeles, shout out to Augie's dad, Albert, came up with this way to keep us connected because we were starting these Zooms monthly and then they went to twice a month and then they became weekly. Dads were becoming so close so quickly. And there was just this desire, intense desire to stay connected, to get to know each other even better and just a way to stay in touch. And so that has been the absolute lifeline for our organization. And I had never even heard of Discord. So this was something that was brought to us and is just absolutely representative of what this community is all about, because people bring amazing ideas all the time. And this space really is all of ours. And were it not for everybody showing up in whatever capacity they're ready to, that's what makes it such an effective, supportive, and warm space. But in addition to our virtual engagement, we also do in-person meetups, whether they're regional. We have dads in 35 states, 13 countries at this point. So it's becoming a global community. And these dads are meeting up if they're traveling for work, or even if they all live in a similar region, they'll make a plan, usually using Discord, to meet up with one another. This past weekend, I was actually in New York City for our first Sad Dads Club meetup there. It was amazing. We just had dinner together and it was just so fun. But in addition to our regional meetups, we also do twice a year retreats in Maine. And our plan is to expand where those are offered around the country. But for right now, we've been doing them twice annually, once in the spring and once in the fall, on Panther Pond, which is in Raymond, Maine. It's about half an hour northwest of Portland, the big city of Maine. And those are transformative. That may sound idealistic or dramatic, but they're incredible. They are so awesome and so fun and so joyous and so intense, but not in a way that should scare anyone. One person referred to it the other day on Discord. This was also Augie's dad, Albert. He referred to it as taking a trip with his son, because that is where he is able to connect with his child most deeply. And that's not to say that everybody necessarily has that experience, but that's one of many anecdotes that I could give about the retreats. And they are just these, it's so easy for us to spend time together and for us to be together. The circumstances under which we're brought together is sad. What happened to us is tragic. But being able to maintain a space and a memory for and with our child and share that with other guys who want to hear about that child, who say the name of that child, who let other dads know when they're thinking about their child, that's keeping that child so present and so alive in all the ways, except for the one we wish mostly that they were. But in what we're dealing with, there would be nothing more sad than having that child forgotten. And that would be a compounded loss. And so really in everything we do, but especially these retreats, I mean, it's a way to keep our children with us and share them with a group of people who aren't curling their toes when we're talking about them, aren't waiting for us to get done with the dream that they had about that child. They're there listening and they're there actively engaged in wanting to hear whatever that dad wants to share. Mm-hmm. So that really encapsulates all of our community building, which again, we're always thinking of and looking for new ways to expand what we offer. But our community building and our nurturing of a supportive community is really based in peer-to-peer support. It's a non-clinical space. None of us are mental health professionals. None of us are clinicians. Like, we are just guys who have similar lived experiences. And it's great that we can offer things virtually because our reach is boundless. But there's nothing like when we get together in person. That is just an elevated level of brotherhood. It's so, all my best friends now are lost dads. All the people with whom I'm closest with and with whom I speak most often are lost dads. The end of our mission statement, providing access to mental health services, was an exact sort of, we're looking at, okay, we want to keep doing what we're doing, but now that we're a nonprofit, what more could we do that we ourselves can't do? Well, none of us are clinicians. None of us are mental health professionals, but we so intensely value and understand the importance of seamless access to quality professional mental health services. So right now, Sad Dads Club partners with therapists who specialize in child loss and grief, and we pay for up to 6 sessions per dad with that mental health professional. We see that there is not only a financial barrier to professional mental health services, but also a logistical one. And we don't think that finances necessarily dictate need. There can be a dad out there who has a great job, has wonderful insurance, but the executive functioning in the wake of child loss is gone. They don't have the bandwidth to figure out what therapists are in their network, who accept their insurance, who are taking new patients, who do they even have experience treating someone who has endured child loss and is grieving. So we want to remove all of that, the financial and the logistical components, and get these dads in there the second that they ask for that help. Another part of this program is making sure that these therapists have immediate availability. All the dad has to do is reach out to us and say, I would love to take you up on your professional mental health support program. And We have them sign two documents via DocuSign. We set up an we email them with the therapist contact information, and that therapist is waiting to hear from them. And they know that they will be in there within a matter of days, depending on the lost dad's availability, honestly. These therapists are wonderful about always keeping us looped into their schedule and say, like, getting a little bit busy, so I might not be able to take someone for 2 weeks, but we want to get someone in there in no longer than a week. And it hardly ever takes a week. It is usually within that same 7 days of outreach that a dad, you know, indicates to us that they want to do this. They want to take advantage of the professional mental health support that they can then get in nearly immediately with a quality mental health professional.
Wow, that's incredible. And I think you're exactly right. There's many different ways that we see barriers to that support. And one of my favorite pieces is how you really facilitate that connection. You don't just hand them a phone number. You don't just, you know, kind of provide a name that you recommend. You really are kind of giving that warm handoff, which I, you know, it's just so incredibly important, because when you are at your lowest in that moment, it can be, like you said, just more than you could possibly gather within yourself to make that phone call. And it's, you know, for people who haven't experienced that, it's kind of hard to even realize how something so mundane can feel like climbing a mountain at that moment. But I love that is a critical piece of your programming, because it really does help break down those barriers, which is fantastic.
One of our dads here in Maine, Avi's dad, Mike, once said that when he was prompted, we try and do a few, have dads answer some questions when they're at the retreat and we record them. And he just said that Sad Dad's Club was providing the torch during the darkest days of his life. Mm-hmm. And that became something that really was internalized. And we cannot make it too easy for these dads. Like, we have to just do everything that we possibly can. If there are a few extra steps that we can take to give that warm handoff, as you said, to keep that light with them as they go through a next tunnel that has another light, just make sure that they can see the light before we take that torch away, as I really think what we're trying to do, and stay as close to them, stay as connected to them, and do everything that we possibly can to get them this help that they deserve, because it leads to relief. And that is exactly what we are trying to do. That's exactly our goal. We want to make sure that these dads feel relief. A lot of them come into the space and don't think they deserve it, because sadness and pain is the most closely associated feeling that they have with their child. And then they hear from other dads that say, like, you will feel better again, and you don't have to feel guilty about feeling better. And above that, your child would want you to feel better. And it's such an incredible and harmonious and supportive and effective space because of all the dads who show up and keep showing up for one another. And that is truly what makes it what it is. It's an idea that Chris J and I had to start a community, but no community exists without people showing up and further continuing to show up. So anytime I speak so fondly of what's happening, it's a testament of these dads as individuals who keep making the decision, keep making the effort to show up for themselves, for their child, and for every other dad and every other dad's child who's in the community. That's what makes what we do work.
Yeah. Well, I just listening to you describe it, I can tell it's a very rewarding thing to be a part of and to experience or to watch happening, which is absolutely phenomenal. But given all those rewards, I'm sure it hasn't been all just utopia. What kinds of challenges or struggles, barriers have you encountered yourself?
Oh, myself, professionally, personally, which one?
With the organization, I guess, is kind of where I'm
but
thinking.
The organization, there's so many. Everything at every turn, at every corner, things don't just happen, especially in a place where there is no guidebook, not only for grief, but for a nonprofit like this. We have to be creative. We have to be nimble. We have to be flexible. And that can be really frustrating, because nothing is written. Nothing is guiding us or telling us best practice. And as many other nonprofits as we connect with who give us unbelievable advice, it really is up to us to figure out how to make this work. And there's always, I mean, right now as an organization, I am the single full-time employee. So I am the fundraiser. I am the spokesperson. I am the marketer. I am the information technology professional, which I am not qualified to be. Thank goodness for chat support on the various technological platforms we have. There's been such a learning curve. The whole aesthetic for our nonprofit and our community started because it was like, I don't know anything else other than to write with a Sharpie on a piece of paper, take a picture of it and put it on Instagram. Cause that's something that I can reliably do all the time. And that like is all that made sense to me. We have since had other dads who have come in and helped us become a little more mature, especially when it comes to financial tracking. We have like the most savvy, incredible spreadsheet that like talks to itself because Sailor's dad, Patrick, who's a CFO out in Kansas City, like built it for us. And so everybody also chips in. So that you didn't ask like what's great about it or easy about it. That's what becomes easy is I can ask for help and I can get it. But otherwise, it's just an intense learning curve. I've never been the executive director of anything. I've never been a co-founder of anything besides like a rock band, which I don't say that lightly. That was a lot of work too, but that's not what this podcast is about. This like everything is new. Even as we start to get rolling and our programming is feeling solid. It's what more can we do? What do we do next? How do we reach more dads? It's growing. Yes, that's great. But how do we grow more? How do we reach more? If we're in 35 states, how do we figure out getting in the other 15? What's the most meaningful use of our time? What's the greatest, you know, return on investment of doing outreach and expanding awareness? But I also think that we have to alleviate, or maybe I have to alleviate the pressure and just be like, but I don't want to alleviate the pressure. I want the pressure to constantly be on. I want to be, you know, almost underwater. If I were bored, it would be a much bigger problem. But everything is, I would say the biggest, if I had to pick one, is just ability, not for me to manage time. I'm a great time manager, but the amount of time that things take and they're just not being enough hours in the day. And if something pops up, like on our gift form or in our donor database that I have to troubleshoot, I could have half the day gone on that. And that was half the day that I had planned to submit grant proposals. And so now I'm behind on that. And if I left it to the last minute, which I typically try not to do. Yeah. So I was probably pretty vague and broad, but that's just to capture sort of everything is tough. But it's also like every job I've ever had, I've been frustrated in. And this is the only job where I love being frustrated because I can, there's no more rewarding work. There's no more inspiring or motivating work that I've ever been a part of. And it's so palpable. It's so real. It's so important. It's so meaningful for me and for all of the dads who keep showing up in there. And that's at the forefront of my mind every day. So even as things are getting frustrating or discouraging, I know we'll get through it because we're all showing up and we're getting through this. We're not going to move past it. We're going to live with it forever. But shoot, if we can still put one foot in front of the other after what we've endured and we can talk about it with one another and we can show up for one another, I can probably Google or stay on the, customer support line for a little longer and it won't be that big a deal.
Yeah. I think everything you expressed is so relatable. Certainly for anybody, I can relate to it 100%. But I think anybody who has tried to run an organization, especially that grassroots building stages, yeah, is where you wear all the hats, and the not enough hours in the day is a very real thing. But you also just answered my very next question about it is easy from the outside. Sometimes people look at it and say, you're dealing with such heavy, sad, very dark, at times emotions and things that people are going through. And then you add in just the regular, normal, everyday challenges of, you know, IT and fundraising and all that. But what is it that, and you already just kind of laid that out so beautifully that it's the dads and being able to see what it provides. There's so much motivation and inspiration that comes from that, that it makes the rest of it kind of pale.
Truly. I always, when asked about it, and I get asked about it from friends with whom I grew up who know I'm doing this full time, many have asked, like, aren't you just sad all the time with having to hear these heartbreaking stories? And I'm like, no, I'm not sad all the time. In fact, I'm buoyant. Yes, it is emotionally fatiguing and it gets sad. And I cry more than I've ever cried in my life in a concentrated number of years. But what we see in Sad Dad's Club and what we know that we are as a community providing is like a new lease on life for a lot of people when they see that they feel hopeless when they come in through our proverbial doors. And some of them very reluctantly come in. And I could give any number of anecdotes around dads who have then, kind of been there because they had to be. Maybe something happened at home. Not going to name names, but I've heard about people punching through walls and the partner being like, you got to do something. Like you, this is it. Like you're not doing well. You're struggling. You deserve relief. And that's all in love that the partner wants to then. And so some dads come in reluctantly and some dads then even still with that mindset of like, I just don't believe anything is going to help me. Then this does. Then they articulate that they felt like darkness was it for them, that this life of pain was, that was what was going to be the biggest part and the only part of their life. Even if they have living children, even if they have a great marriage, a great job. But we see the light and the joy return into their face, in their body. It is a transformation, and nothing is more inspiring and motivating than that. Nothing is more important than that. And it's just us showing up for each other. It's not rocket science. It's such a low ask amidst such a heavy life event. To just have access to community, to have guys who are looking out for you, to have guys who are asking how you're doing, and to mention the name of your child and to celebrate their birthday with you. Because we have a calendar, once again, started by Augie's dad, Albert, shout out, where he gets every child's birthday. And on our Discord, it just lights up with tagging that dad, wishing that child a happy birthday, reminding that child how much they're loved, remembered, and missed every day. And I just, the simplicity of it is so fascinating to me because of how much it changes and saves people's lives. And I don't even necessarily mean that saving lives in the literal definition, but I also mean saving lives in that they are able to preserve or go back to, I should say, a life that they once knew, back where they had things that they did that they loved that fulfilled them. They have now permission. Because they hear from other dads like, no, don't stay stuck in sadness. We get why you feel sad, but don't think that you don't deserve relief. And one of the dads who was a big runner, this is an example I've used often in conversations, was saying that he couldn't run anymore. He didn't want to run because that was what he did to feel good. And that was what he just couldn't strap on his shoes and go out and run the way he did. And then another runner dad chimed in and said that I had the exact same problem. I remember that exact feeling of just looking at my shoes, being like, I should, but I can't. And then I started running again, and it was my time where I spoke to my child. And that got me running again. It's finding those new ways to connect with your child that aren't rooted in unhealthy habits. And it's not to say to brush away the sadness. No. It's a way to say your child is always your child, your baby is always your baby, and here are some really awesome ways that you can connect with them doing what you once loved. I'm a musician and music didn't sound the same to me. I didn't want to pick up a guitar. I didn't want to pick up drumsticks. Like I just, it felt so empty and worthless. And then I started playing within the context of it being like with Lila in mind. It was like, this is now a new approach and a new way for me to do something I've historically loved. And now I do it in a way that I love even more because it's such a deliberate time that is dedicated to her. So I have Sad Dad's Club, and then I have this music that I create with her in mind. And everything is, I just think about like, what do I feel today when I'm playing this song? And it's all instrumental. So I'm not putting words to it. It's just what comes out like that is intrinsically in there in me or sitting that day. But back to, that's the best part. Is that transformation in those dads who come so helpless and so afraid and scared and sad, understandably so. And then to see them return to their life. Their life is then saved that way. They can then return to the places in their life where they are so in demand, like with their partner, with their living children, if they have any, at their careers. And they know, I have this community. I have this space where I can always dedicate whenever I need to this child who's no longer in my arms.
Yeah, and that there's at this stage of things when you can't go back and change the past, that is probably the best, most what powerful gift you can give someone is the ability to find those ways to still connect, which is so amazing.
Yeah.
Well, I know we're about out of time, but I just have to ask. I know personally you learn so much from every family that you work with, and it helps you grow along this way too. But if you could go back to the day that Lila was born and tell yourself something that you know now that you wish you had known then, what would it be?
You are going to be a brand new version of yourself, and that doesn't have to scare you.
I think it says it all. It
Yeah.
really does. Yeah, fantastic. Well, tell us how anybody can find you or get connected or help support what you're doing.
You can visit our website, saddadsclub.org. Instagram is also our most used social media platform. On there, you can find us. We are at sad.dads.club. And if anybody wanted to reach out directly on our website, you can hit connect and contact. Might be in the reverse order, might be contact and connect, but that leads to an email address that is info@saddadsclub.org. People are more than welcome to reach out that way. And just don't wait. Like if you are thinking about it, then that's all you need to know. If diving into a community feels overwhelming, we have dads who have raised their hand and volunteered to be peer mentors, so we can hook you up with somebody one-on-one to connect with. We have dads who have had a myriad of different circumstances under which they lost their child. So whoever's out there and might hear this and thinks that it might be for them, just take the dive. And if you ever have to back away, that's okay too. We don't even have a door. We just say there's this opening. And you can walk in or walk out, but we're always going to be there and we're always going to be keeping the fire warm.
That's fantastic. Well, thank you so much for taking the time today. Thank you for offering these programs and these services. I know here at Star Legacy, we are super excited about lots of different opportunities that we're looking at to try to collaborate and support each other in our collective goals. And so I really appreciate all of that you are doing in your partnership. And yeah, thanks for starting this and best of luck to you all.
Thank you very much, and thank you for everything you do at Star Legacy.